Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, another After Dark Night announced, Magic Happens details, DVC Tower concept art,
Food and Wine Festival tickets on sale, Haunted Mansion permits found, we discuss Bob Iger and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of January 29th, 2020. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Tig Bushman. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to Sarah C., Janelle C., and Matt and Rhonda U. for becoming patrons of the podcast. Well, this support helps make DL Weekly possible. Our patrons get some pretty nice perks like access to our Discord chat, live shows, some DL Weekly swag, and more. If you'd like to learn more, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
Does listening to the show make you want to be in the park? It makes me want to be in the park. So if so, contact James, Mike, and Scott over at Concierge to get your next trip planned. They've helped make our trips truly memorable and hassle-free. If you want that same experience, please head on over to concierge.com and chat with them about what your dream Disney vacation looks like.
Now let's get to the news. Well, there is a disturbance in the force coming to Disneyland After Dark in August. Star Wars Night has been announced for August 27th, 2020. Tickets have not gone on sale yet, but this is sure going to be a popular one. Not only is it Star Wars, which is popular by itself, but it's also the first day of the Star Wars Celebration, which is taking place across the street at the Anaheim Convention Center. No specific details have been released, but we will report on it as soon as we know. Keep an eye out for tickets going on sale, as this is sure to sell out quickly.
So Tag and James are super, super excited about this. So is Vern. I'm excited just because the one thing that they've kind of got given us little teasers about this. And I'm very excited because there is going to be Star Wars themed fireworks at this party. And I don't know why, but that just sounds like extra amazing. There's also going to be galactic dance parties, of course, character encounters. We're wondering if there's going to be probably some rare characters that you mm-hmm. don't normally get to see. So yeah. Very excited to hear more details about this one.
One thing that James and I both really enjoyed when we went to Hollywood Studios out in Florida was that they had a fireworks show there that was all Star Wars themed.
Yes.
The music from Star Wars lends itself beautifully to fireworks.
Yes.
And so James is excited because, like you said, he thinks that there's going to be some rare characters that we either haven't seen or don't see very often in the parks. Plus, again, they haven't announced this yet, and they haven't really given details on the other After Hours events very much, but if Rise of the Resistance is available during mm-hmm. this time, which I can't imagine it wouldn't be, this would be a good opportunity, because I still think by the time August rolls around, it's still going to be a very popular attraction. I think this will be one of the best opportunities to be able to ride that a couple times in one day.
And skipping a wait.
Yep. So that's definitely one of the things I'm very excited for, but in general, I think Star Wars could be really cool. It's going to be interesting splitting it between Tomorrowland and Galaxy's Edge, because they said that it does start over in the launch bay in Tomorrowland mm-hmm. where there's some stuff going on. Of course, we have Star Tours and stuff over there. But I think the whole park is going to be filled with stuff. I am curious about the fireworks, like you said. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, one thing that I think we talked about before was people said that watching the fireworks it's really amazing in Galaxy's Edge. When they did the opening out in Hollywood Studios, they actually had some drones that looked like ships from Star Wars. So I'm wondering if the fireworks show will implement some of these things, because I think that would be super cool. Because we haven't seen any drones or anything in Disneyland yet.
Well, and I can't imagine that they would have had those drones made up to use. I mean, it is Disney, but maybe I don't think they would have had those drones made up to use just once. I feel like they're going to try and use them a couple of times at least. So mm-hmm. fingers crossed that we'll be seeing some of those Star Wars ship drones. I don't know what the technical term is for them, but yeah, fingers crossed that we'll be seeing some of those in California. And you know, as you were talking, I'd completely forgotten, but Vern and I actually saw that same Star Wars fireworks show in Walt Disney World. Yeah. And you're right, it was amazing. The music with the it's such epic music, and to have the fireworks set to it is just just takes it up like several notches.
I agree.
Well, this week, Disney released more concept art for the upcoming Magic Happens parade that will be debuting on February 28th at Disneyland. The new parade will replace Soundstational that ran from 2011 until July of 2019. Some of the floats that we got a new look at included the Cinderella float, Sword in the Stone, and the Princess and the Frog theme float.
Now, did you see the link I posted in our chat earlier?
Yes.
That, because it had more details even of the actual like pictures of the floats, not just the concept art.
Yeah.
So we'll put a link in the show notes as well, but the Disney Parks Twitter account posted a video of some of the things coming to it, and I am beyond excited. When we had our live stream on Sunday, we talked about the floats and some of the descriptions, because this had just been released right before we did the stream, and Teresa found, actually, you want to explain your...
Oh, my epiphany that we had on the live stream? Yeah, so we were talking about... Gisteg was saying he didn't quite understand the name of the parade, why they went with Magic Happens. And it dawned on me that all of the floats are based on magical moments that happen in some of our favorite characters' lives. So, for instance, the Sword in the Stone float is the moment where Wart, or soon-to-be King Arthur, is actually pulling the sword from the stone. Therefore, magical moment. He's becoming the king. Cinderella, the float is... I'm very interested in this float. It will kind of get into details about these. We've actually already decided what our discussion topic is for next week, because we're both so excited about this. But anyways, the Cinderella float is the moment of transformation from pumpkin to the carriage to take her off to the royal ball. So again, a magical moment, magical transformation. And the Princess and the Frog is actually the kiss, where it changes them from frogs back into humans. So it's so cool to me that this whole concept of this is based on, you know, moments in time that are just magical for these characters.
Yeah, and in that video that they posted today, I saw some like effects that they're going to have in this, and it just is amazing. Did you see the one where they had Dante like leaping on the thing? Like I ran it back because I was like, what?
Yeah.
That was so cool. I'm really excited about this carriage. They didn't show any type of effect with that in the video that I watched, but they did show the carriage. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right that magic happens, like these magical moments like happening. And what a cool idea for a parade. Actually, it was funny because I wasn't that excited about this parade. Like I thought it looked kind of cool, but I didn't understand the concept, I guess. But then when it dawned on you the other day when we were doing the stream, I'm like, I love this idea.
It's like, the thing that's so perfect about it, I feel like it's so obvious, but it isn't obvious because there's magic all around all of the Disney stories.
Well, and Disney uses the term magic like for everything.
Yeah, so, you know, and I think it's cool because it's not just like magical characters, but I mean, I have heard that like the genie's going to be in here, Tinkerbell. But, you know, I like that it's also just moments of magic from these different stories as well. The more I hear about this, the more excited I am for this parade. And I really feel that I might have to be watching it every single day that we're there in April, because they kind of created this parade to be something that you would want to watch over and over and over again.
We'll see. Although, usually a parade I'm good watching once and done with, but I will say when James and I were there for the 60th anniversary, we did watch Paint the Night. Like every time we came upon it, we got sucked into it.
That's just a magical parade in and of itself.
Well, that and your
my Main Street Electrical
parade. Yeah, when we were there, you were very adamant about catching it as many times as humanly possible.
There's just something about nighttime parades and all of the lights. It's just extra magic.
Yeah. Well, not only did Disney release the concept art for some more of the floats, but costume concepts have also been released. All of the costumes are very colorful and whimsical, along with the costumes. A summary of the parade was also released. I was excited for this because I was looking through. I don't want to like spoil it for anybody, so I won't go through the summary. We do have, if you can't wait, you can go to the link in our show notes. And they'll have that stuff. But what do you think of these costumes? They look so like bright and colorful.
They're very interesting. Some of the costumes to me were pretty like, okay, that will be with this float, this will be with that float. But other ones, I wasn't quite sure where they fit into the float. They're all just very
Where does the guy who looks like he's a mummy fit into?
I don't see. That's one of the ones that I don't know about.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a couple of them that I'm not entirely certain where I think this costume, like what float this costume would be near. Hmm. So it makes me even more like interested to see what's going to, you know, how this all comes together.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said in our last story, I wasn't that excited about this parade, but the more I hear about it.
Just dawned on me.
What?
Look at the lady that's like a ballerina.
Sure.
I think he's the complement of her because look, he's got the little.
Sure.
And that looks like birch bark or something maybe.
So maybe like Frozen, yep, like in the forest?
I think both of them are parts of the Frozen forest.
Maybe. I mean, I guess we'll find out when we go, yeah. Right? Or when it premieres in just a couple weeks.
Well, the new Disney Vacation Club Tower coming to the Disneyland Hotel had some concept art released this week. The tower is sort of a mix of retro yet modern, taking on design elements from the 60s, including warm wood, lots of glass and stone. The new tower will contain 350 rooms, including two multi-level grand villas. A Mickey-shaped spa and outdoor pool bar will also be part of the new building. If permits are approved and the construction goes to plan, the new tower will open in 2023.
So this is kind of interesting because we posted this in our supporter chat and almost everybody kind of had similar kind of thoughts that they were like, I don't know if I like it. I know right. You were saying you didn't like, you liked like half of it, right. But not the other half.
Yeah. I like, so if you're looking at the concept art, I like the left side that has like the colorful glass parts. I'm assuming it's glass.
Sure.
But I wasn't in love with the right side. That was kind of more plain and looked like it just had like faux stonework mm-hmm. on it.
You know, one part that like you'd really have to look for is if you look at the side of the building, it's just very plain. There's no like decoration yeah. or anything on the side. It's just like yeah. a gray side. So I'm wondering how this will turn out in reality. Because yeah. sometimes concept art looks one way and right. they make changes because maybe they can't get certain elements or they decide that like they like this other element better during construction. So I'm interested. One thing that was interesting to me was in the concept art, it did not look big enough to have 350 rooms in it. And the fact that there would be two multi-level grand villas, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm excited about the Mickey-shaped spa, an outdoor pool bar, all now sorts of extra little things that we didn't know
about. You noticed that the bottom level
yeah.
is like walkthrough.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. like there's no lobby or anything. It's kind of strange.
I'm curious about that because the bottom of the, you know, or first floor of the other towers, there's like stuff there. It's yeah. not rooms, but there's like shops or restaurants, that sort of thing. So it was interesting to me that they're leaving this completely open. So yeah. I'm curious if there's going to be any sort of vending type things or if it's just going to be lounges or I'm really interested to see what they're going to do yeah. with the space.
Well, you can't tell from the concept art, so we'll find out, I guess. Well, if you're interested in going to any of the special events for the Food and Wine Festival, it's time to get your tickets. The festival will run from February 28th through April 21st. Well, the special events are $25 each and include a tasting, and the options are beer, wine, or mixology to choose from. There's also a culinary adventure tour for $99 and the winemaker reception for $110. Tickets can be purchased at Disneyland.com.
So, you know, I've never really paid attention to prices on these just because I haven't been able to attend the Food and Wine Festival yep. yet myself. I was actually surprised. I was thinking some of these special event tickets were going to be much, much higher. So I was really like, really excited that these events start at just $25 each. And I know that it's, you know, just kind of tastings or mixologies, but still, I figured since it's, you know, some special event at a Disney park that it would be, you know, a higher ticket price on that. So that I was really happy about that.
Yeah, $25 I think is pretty affordable.
No, I don't think that's bad. Well, as Tag just kind of said off air, I am really excited about this. The next two stories, actually. Disney has filed a permit for work in the Haunted Mansion during its refurbishment. The permit calls for installation of lighted steel panels and an opening in an existing wall for a picture box. Rumor suggests that this could be an on-ride photo upgrade or just some new lighting and effects being added to the attraction. Personally, I don't care what it is. I'm just excited about it.
So somebody I saw online was talking about how they thought that this could be because like in Disney World, the Haunted Mansion there actually has like a photo thing like you would on Splash yeah, Mountain or Space
you know
Mountain.
What's crazy? I don't know how I missed. They must not have had that there the last time I was there. Now, granted, it's been a little while.
Sure.
But somehow I had missed that there's a photo op for the Haunted Mansion mm-hmm. in Magic
There's also
Kingdom.
One for Pirates when you're going down one of the drops.
Yeah.
That so must, I'm surprised yeah. they haven't brought these things to Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
especially with MaxPass, where you get the photo pass included. Yeah, yeah. But so that's one thing. The other thing is they talked about this photo box, and I'm just thinking to myself, like, okay, so is this going to be, because we saw that wall the refurbishment. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if like they're upgrading that hallway with the pictures that kind of transform or what? Because I thought they were already pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. And so Tag's talking about when you first get off the elevator, the hallway that has those portraits in it, that as you kind of stand there, they kind of change, or as you look at them, they look a little bit different.
I believe what you meant to say, Teresa, was after you exit the stretching room.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm sorry.
Well, speaking of the Haunted Mansion, Teresa, I'm sure you're excited about this one too. A nice touch to the Haunted Mansion refurbishment has appeared on its fence. Original concept art and designs for the attraction are on display at the main gate to the mansion's front yard. Not only is there artwork for what was eventually selected for the attraction, but early concepts for a completely different experience than what we have today.
I feel like they've been doing this on a lot of things. The biggest, or the one that really sticks out to my mind, and it may not have been the first, but when they had these kind of things up during the castle refurb, I just love how they, you know, even though it's something that you can't actually visit, they're still bringing you a piece of that attraction for you to, you know, enjoy in some way, shape, or form. So I think it's a really cool thing to see kind of like, I don't know, some like this. It's history of the attraction. It's things that maybe you never knew or never would have seen before, unless you're a big Haunted Mansion person like me and you try and look for all these things. But they probably even have stuff that I haven't even seen. So very cool. I think it's a really nice touch.
So currently there are five like concept drawing pictures. There's three at the bottom that are kind of like that represent kind of what the Haunted Mansion is that we got. The top two are actually really interesting. One of them looks like a road with a Haunted Mansion kind of up on a hill, and there's a graveyard in between, and then there's kind of a church in the foreground, which I've never seen this piece of concept art before, ever. And then the other one that they have is a couple different elevations from the side that show like a different looking house with kind of like a turret in the corner instead of what we have today of like a New Orleans looking mansion. So super cool. Like Teresa said, I love seeing this stuff, especially stuff I haven't seen before, because the artistry at work is just magnificent.
Well, if stuffing yourself at a buffet is how you want to spend your Valentine's Day, you should enjoy this next bit of news. To celebrate Valentine's Day, Disney's Paradise Pier Hotel will offer an all-you-can-eat buffet. Options include heart-shaped pasta, seasonal Valentine's Day desserts, and more. Reservations can be made through the Disneyland.com website. Pricing has not been announced just yet.
Yeah, so they announced this buffet, but they didn't really have too many details, except for basically heart-shaped pasta and Valentine's Day desserts. At first, I thought it was just a buffet, and I was like, well, that's interesting. And then I read about the heart-shaped pasta. I'm like, okay, that's kind of cute. Like, it's a way to kind of add to it. And desserts, of course, you're going to have great desserts, probably some chocolate-covered strawberries or something. But I couldn't find pricing or anything for this either, so I don't know if it's the price of the normal buffet that they have there or what.
Yeah, you know, it's a little crazy to me that we don't seem to have many details on this, because Valentine's Day really isn't that far away. So I'm curious.
Valentine's is like 2 weeks. What's up with that? Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Valentine's Day, for Valentine's Day this year, the park has brought back the cherry cotton candy from last year. This limited time offering is your standard cotton candy, but with a cherry flavor.
So this is really interesting to me, because it doesn't seem to me like it'd be all that exciting. Mm-mm. But the Disney food blog was like super excited that this was coming back, so it must be delicious. Mm-hmm. They do only have this back for a short period of time. Unfortunately, we don't know what that window is, but if this is something that you want to try, make sure that you hit up the parks either on Valentine's Day or right there close to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder, because we've talked about cotton candy recently.
Yeah, the Mandarin orange.
So I'm wondering if we're moving from churro flavors to cotton candy flavors now.
That could be.
What they need to do is, over in the Asia parks, they have different flavors of popcorn that have been extremely popular. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if they're going to get to that at some point. I know that people are very excited about the chocolate popcorn that's from Galaxy's Edge, which I'm excited to try when we go there. In fact, I'm still excited to try a Ronto wrap, since I missed out on that one.
Well, now you have the option of a breakfast Ronto wrap too.
Yeah, see, I'm not a huge like breakfasty person, like stereotypical like breakfast things. So like eggs and stuff like that, it's not a huge thing for me. So
unless it's a Mickey shaped waffle.
But that's different. That's different. Mickey waffles, Mickey pancakes, I'm all about that. But I want to try a Ronto wrap. So next time. And I don't, you know, this is kind of off topic, but do you think, like, are we, is the cantina something we're even going to explore again? Or are we kind of done with the cantina?
You know, honestly, I'm kind of over it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really cool. It's really fun. I just didn't really find a drink that I really, really wanted. So, I mean, I like the atmosphere, but I just...
That Petri dish thing was pretty dang
cool.
The
Petri dish was pretty good, though. You're right.
So maybe we have to go in and just have one of those things and then leave. Because you don't. It's not like you have to pay to get in or have to buy a drink, right? Yeah.
You do have to buy a drink.
What?
Yeah. There's like a one drink minimum per person.
Hmm.
Unless they got rid of it.
Hmm.
Yeah, unless they got rid of it.
I mean, they weren't really good at enforcing any of the rules in there, so I'm not sure.
We'll see.
Well, anyway.
Well, there are some new treats available over at the Jolly Holiday Bakery on Main Street. The first is a Mickey Mouse Cookies and Cream Macaron, which is a red and yellow cookie with yellow buttons and filled with a cookies and cream filling. Yum. The second is a Mickey Mouse Club Mousse Cake. This treat is decorated with a chocolate Mickey Mouse Club logo on the front of the cake, and the cake is actually in the shape of a set, like a pair of Mickey ears. In the center of the chocolate mousse is a vanilla creme brulee center. Double yum. Both of those sound great.
Now, I was trying to figure out the cookies and cream macaron at first, because all I saw was the two sides of the cookie, and I didn't see what was in the middle.
Oh, sure.
And I was like, where's the cookies and cream part of this? And then I thought that the cookies and cream almost was like the gray stuff. And I was like, that could be good. And then I was thinking, oh, chocolate mousse, like it looks like Mickey. Okay. And it's kind of a cake. Okay. Like whatever. But then I saw like there was a picture that they like cut into mm-hmm. it. And I'm like, oh, I kind of like this. And these things look so good. Like their chocolate work on this. It looks so like shiny. And like, I don't even know how you make food like this, to be honest. But,
they're beautiful.
Mm, is this something... The cookies and cream macaron, like, I think is right yes. up my alley.
Oh, 100% it is. I would be interested in trying both of these, really.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully they'll still be there when we're there in April.
Well, this is a strange bit of news that I guess I was excited for, so I put in the news. For guests wanting to purchase MaxPass on the iPhone, again, this kind of was weird to me because I wasn't sure if it was just MaxPass. They only said MaxPass. I don't know if this accounts for tickets and other purchases inside, but for sure, MaxPass on an iPhone, the process has just become easier. Apple Pay is now available for purchasing MaxPass from within the Disneyland app. Apple Pay lets you add your bank credit or debit card to your phone for easy use with a fingerprint or face verification for payment.
That is pretty cool. I was trying to remember now. It's almost been 2 years ago since I had to try and buy MaxPass straight from my phone while I was in the park because mm-hmm. it was kind of more of a last minute purchase. And I was trying to remember the process of that. I remember that I could open the app and I could buy it, but I don't remember the actual how you know, the payment
sure.
part of it, if I could do it through PayPal or if I had to sit there and type in my credit card number or how that part worked. But whatever it was, this sounds like it's way smoother than probably what I had to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm all about efficiency.
Well, because Apple Pay is cool because it just pops up and you do it and it'll pop up your cards and you know, if you're on a newer phone, you double tap the side thing and look at it. If you have an older phone, you just put your thumb in, bam, it's paid for. And the other thing that's nice about it is it doesn't use your credit card number. So I don't think Disney will get hacked, but if they ever do, it's kind of a one-time use token instead of an actual card number, which adds an extra level of security. So I'm a fan.
Well, it's Apple and Disney. It's like the perfect recipe for you.
Oh, that's true.
Continuing the trend of Instagrammable walls around the resort, a new photo wall has come to Downtown Disney. This new installation features Sleeping Beauty Castle with Mickey and Minnie on either side. The new display is located by the old ESPN zone. I think this wall is super cute.
It is cute. I do think that things with like the ESPN zone that was, of course, the pop-up Disney mm-hmm. thing that they had going on for the summer. I think that they do need to do something with this building. So putting up some photo opportunities does something with it, which is kind of nice. I know that a lot of people like these photo walls. We actually haven't seen them for a while there. It seemed like they were coming out with these all the time. They had all those ones in Hollywoodland. They had that one in Toontown. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting this one like popped up in Downtown Disney. So pretty cool. Pretty cool. Well, we've got the two next news stories are about the after hours nights. And so this first one is more information about Sweethearts Night coming to Disneyland. So
really soon too.
Yeah, really soon. Of course, coming up, there's two nights. There's the February 12th and February 13th.
And just so you guys know, it looks like the February 13th event is sold out, so you can still look. Hopefully, they'll still be available when you look, but the February 12th event is still on sale as of now, and they are on sale online through February 11th.
Yeah. So things that are going to be part of this After Hours event is a fireworks extravaganza. So that'll be, it seems to me like it'll be some type of fireworks just for this event and not a normal fireworks show. There's going to be some dancing and music. There's going to be an Imperial Ball near It's a Small World, which sounds super cool because you can waltz beside some Disney characters. And what a unique idea. I just like the idea of this. Of course, there's going to be character greetings and photo ops, a bunch of different food options, limited release merchandise with Disneyland After Dark Sweethearts Night on there, access to some of the park's classic attractions. There's going to be some keepsakes like a commemorative credential and guide map, as well as unlimited downloads of PhotoPass photos taken during the party. And you can basically, they're kind of encouraging dressing up in some type of either Disney bounding or just something nice for the night. But just make sure you follow their costume guidelines like every event.
So, you know, I feel like we were kind of knocking on Sweethearts Night a little bit. We didn't, that was kind of lower on our, you know, if we could go to all of the Disney After Dark nights. I feel like Sweethearts Night was a little bit lower on our list. But after reading all of the fun things that they have planned, this one, it moved up on my list anyways. I'm always excited about special nighttime spectaculars.
What did it beat out
fireworks
for you?
It for sure, it beat out Pixar Night. I think they were both, you know, pretty even. And I think it's almost up to, if not almost even, with 80s Night now, too. I really like the idea of waltzing with beloved Disney characters in front of It's a Small World. I just feel like that would be a beautiful backdrop. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think is fun, too, is the photo ops is not just your normal photo pass places, or it's not just the cast or the, you know, what things that you can always get photos with. They actually are going to have pictures by you can take your picture by romantic scenes from different Disney films, including scenes from Lady and the Tramp and Little Mermaid. So I think that's kind of an extra fun touch.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see what these photo ops look like.
Well, that was all Sweethearts Night. So let's talk about Villains Night. So what are some of the things that they announced for Villains Night, which we're excited for because we're actually going to experience this.
Yeah. So tickets are still available for Villains Night if you are interested in going. Tag and I will be there. You can purchase them online now through April 29th. So I don't know. I feel like we were just talking about this, how we're very excited for Villains Night, but we weren't really sure why we were excited because we hadn't seen any specific details as to what really was going to happen. So some event highlights that have now been released by Disney is there's going to be a Villains Cabaret. So you can watch all of the outlaws sing and dance their way through this riff-raff love and review. I love how Disney describes things. That's awesome. There's Shake It Up, which is you're casting a spell with your smoothest groove. So there's going to be DJ dance parties throughout the park. Of course, character greetings. I'm really excited about these because, of course, we have our well-known villains that I feel like we see usually during like Halloween time.
Maleficent and Ursula.
And the Evil Queen.
Yep.
But you have, not only do you have the villains, you're going to maybe meet some of their friends or some of their henchmen around the park. So I'm curious to see who those people are. There's, of course, going to be Disney PhotoPass photographers. They're going to, the scenes are going to be the villains' lairs and thrones and like villain themed scenes, which I think is going to be fun. This one I'm very curious about. This one does not have very many details. It's just called Now Sing, from like, you know, Little Mermaid, Ursula.
Yeah.
Anyways, it says find your voice and sing along, but beware of eerily enchanted seashells. And it doesn't really give much else. So I'm waiting for more details on that. That could be pretty amazing. And then, of course, themed foods, limited release merchandise, after hour access to some attractions, evil keepsakes, same thing. It's a commemorative credential and guide map. You also get unlimited downloads of the Disney PhotoPass photos, which I think is a really cool add for these parties. And then they do also want you and encourage you to dress up like your own villain, whether it's you want to mimic a Disney villain or be your own version of a villain.
So I'm excited. I do see a gaping hole that there is no nighttime spectacular.
I know. So that's why I'm kind of hopeful with the Now Sing, because I'm assuming that's Ursula themed, since everything about our little hints are under the sea themed, and she's our biggest, baddest under the sea villain, which then makes me hope that they could somehow incorporate the World of Color stage with it. So I have a little tiny bit of hope left that there might be a nighttime spectacular with the World of Color.
I want them to do something like that, and I also want them, and I know from this that it's probably not happening, but I'd love for them to bring back Villains Grove, because that seemed so dang cool.
It was amazing. The only thing, though, is remember how long it took for them to put all that up?
Yeah.
And get it all set together? I don't
think...
For
like one night?
Yeah, I don't think they'd be able to do that for one night.
Sure.
I do think when the Oogie Boogie Bash comes, I do think Villains Grove will definitely be back. That was a hit. The entire night that I was there, the line was just crazy long. Now, it was very weird because the line looked ridiculous, but it really didn't take that long to get through it, but well worth it.
Well, Disney has done something right with these after hours nights, because it got us excited to go to two of them now, Star Wars and Villains, so something's going on. Well, now we take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer James tries to stump us with Disney trivia. He'll read us the question, we will attempt to answer them, sometimes fail, and then James will give us the correct answers after the discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week, James?
All right, I've got a group of listener questions for you this week, so it should be a good one. Question number one comes from Gretchen D. Where in the resort can you find a coin-operated player piano?
Ooh.
I feel like I've seen this.
I'm pretty confident you have.
I feel like the... Oh, no. Yes. Is it in the Crystal Arcade on Main Street?
I want to say... Do you have a hint?
It is in the Disneyland park.
Okay, good. That was my question. I want to say it's in Frontierland somewhere. It seems like that would be the spot for it. But you could be right with... It could also be on Main Street. I'm trying to think. What is it called again?
A coin-operated player piano.
What's a player piano? Really? Like it plays itself?
Yeah. I was like, you know, the Music Man, the player piano? Yeah, yeah, it plays itself.
What are you talking about?
So the Golden Horseshoe Review. Oh, no, it's not that anymore. I forget what it's called.
So, yes, it's a piano that plays itself.
You know, I'm going to go with you, Teresa. I think it's also in the...
You're jumping
in,
on the...
Or in the Penny Arcade or Crystal Arcade or whatever. Yeah, Penny Arcade.
What is it called? Is it Penny or Crystal?
I think the Crystal Arcade is one in Florida.
Oh, maybe I should record that. Because I was going to say Penny. I'm like, wait, isn't it Crystal? Oh, my God. Oh, which one is it?
Oh, God, there's a Crystal Arcade and a Penny Arcade.
No. Why?
Well, I'm going to say the Penny Arcade while Teresa says the Crystal Arcade.
Why are there two?
Crazy, right? All right, question number two. A first timer onto our trivia submissions. Thanks, Tess K, for giving us this one. There's a famous historic painting inside a Disneyland attraction. Probably not the real thing, but we'll go with it anyway. What painting is it, and where can you find it?
I don't know what it is, but is it in the waiting area of Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln?
That's what I want to say.
I don't know what it's called.
Is it like?
Though.
Do you have a hint of the painting itself? Because you and I are both saying in Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. Because it's something with Washington, or it's one of the presidents, one of the two.
My hint is the painting comes from an Italian artist.
Dang, what an obscure hint.
If this was Disney World, I would say that, oh, then it's probably in Tony's restaurant or whatever. Italian? Where is there something Italian? Oh, would that be the Plaza Inn? Because they have like pasta and stuff there. No, that's right.
I was going to say, just because it's Italian doesn't mean it's depicting something
that's true.
Italian.
That's true. So I'm just going to say it's in Lincoln. And I don't know. Like, what you're saying, what's the name of the painting or what does it show?
What is the name of the painting?
Yeah,
you know the name of the painting.
Oh, goodness. Well, it's not the Mona Lisa.
No, it's not. Why did you have to say that?
Because trivia's got to be fun.
Oh, why did you have to say that?
I feel like you Googling something to figure out the painting, like it's some tune that's Italian. I'm like, who's Italian that's a tune?
No. I don't know.
I think it's in Lincoln. If it's is it like an actual painting?
Yeah.
How many hints you want?
Yes.
So it wouldn't be like some goofy tune version. It would just be the actual painting.
No, but I feel like it could be there and just like have paint splattered on it, or, you know, it, the painting itself doesn't have sure. to be tuned. Dang you. Why did you have to say that?
Sorry.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's the Mona Lisa, but I don't know where it is.
So you're not doing Lincoln?
No.
Okay.
I backed out. Which okay. probably was the wrong way to go, but I don't did know. It.
I guess we'll find out.
We will.
The only paintings I'm thinking of that I remember distinctly was, I really enjoy the paintings of the Plaza Inn when you go in the Plaza Inn, because one side is like too. One side is like winter at the Plaza Inn. They have mm-hmm. like ice skating, and then they have one that's like spring.
Those are incredible.
Anyway.
All right, our third question comes from Tara F., who's been on a roll with Monsters, Inc. attractions. So on Mike and Sully to the Rescue, the sign at the ticket booth in the queue reads, a list of rules for monster passengers, including 7 behaviors that aren't allowed while on the bus, starting with no eating, drinking, and what are the other 5?
Oh, boy. Keep your...
And I'll give you a hint from Tara.
Tentacles to yourself?
The other 5 are bodily functions.
No burping?
Burping. Farting.
Hey, this is a family-friendly podcast.
Sorry, passing gas.
Bodily functions.
Belching. Try to think of things monsters would do.
Sneezing. Is there, they're all bodily functions?
They're all bodily functions.
What, like,
so Tag is on a right track with thinking about monsters and these as well for some of them.
Burping, farting, belching, sneezing.
No, like, is there something like slime? Don't leave any slime behind or something. Fur? Shedding?
Shedding?
Dang, this is a good question. Molting?
I'll put shedding on there. Drooling?
Ooh, that's a good one. Mucus. No, I don't know. I'm thinking of like slug type monsters. All right. I don't know.
It's like, I think Teresa's thrown out enough. We'll move on to question number 4. Which I thought was going to be the biggest stumper of the group, so good luck.
Oh, no.
From Scylla H., there's a frosted window design in the Golden Horseshoe featuring cowgirl Slewfoot Sue. She's from the Pecos Bill section of the animated Disney film Melody Time. What animal is Slewfoot Sue riding on in the window design?
It's not going to be a horse. That'd be too easy. Slewfoot Sue, like, they did, like, all types of crazy, like, things, right? Because it was, like, because in you said Pecos Bill. Mm-hmm. Didn't Pecos Bill have, like, a bunch of, like, wasn't he known for, like, doing really silly things? Like, he rode something crazy, like a bull or something, like, or he, like, lassoed a tornado or some ridiculousness like this. I think that's Pecos Bill.
She's riding. Okay, can we get a hint? Is it an animal or is it not an animal?
It is an animal.
Okay.
But it is not something you would typically think of someone riding on because... do I go that far?
Oh, I'm going to say a pig.
Pig?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say she's riding a bull.
Ooh, that's a good one too.
Makes sense.
Oh my God, I'm going to be impressed if we get one right.
We got a lot of learning to do this week. Come back for the answers of this week's trivia after the discussion topic.
Well, for our discussion topic this week, we're going to kind of circle back to something that I almost kind of in the middle of the news discussion topic a couple weeks ago. And we're going to talk about Bob Iger. So the reason that we kind of brought this up was I recently listened to Bob Iger's book called The Ride of a Lifetime, Lessons Learned from 15 Years as CEO of the Walt Disney Company. And I thought this book was great. I listened to the audiobook version of it. So the audiobook is read in part by Bob Iger and Jim Frangione. And it was a very good book. The beginning, the thing that caught me and sucked me into this book was the very beginning they talked about how, and I think I said this on the podcast before, but if I didn't, or if you didn't hear that, I'm going to tell it all again. The beginning of the book starts out kind of in a weird spot, because I thought this was going to kind of talk about like from where he started and where he ended up, which it does. But it starts with a really important time for Bob Iger and for the Walt Disney Company when so much was happening all at the same time. He was talking about how much effort and time he had put in, and the leadership team and the cast members, to make Shanghai Disneyland a reality. They had wanted to get into China for so long, and they had mm-hmm. spent 15 years talking to people there. And he was in China for the grand opening in June of 2015. And in that week, he was scheduled from morning till night. He had every minute of his day scheduled, and all this stuff was meticulously planned out. And they had, you know, that he had all of this pressure on him to get this park open. And the first thing that happened in kind of a string of things, which thinking back on it's kind of weird, but the first thing that happened was, of course, the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando. And they were concerned about that because they were wanting to make sure that they didn't have any Disney World cast members that had been injured or killed at this nightclub. I believe that they said that one person was either injured or killed that did work for the company. So that was definitely tragic. And then once that had started to calm down just a couple days later, on the night before Shanghai Disneyland was set to open, the gator attack that took the life of a young guest at the resort happened at the Grand Floridian. And so it was very interesting because this is the part of the book that Bob Iger reads himself. And he talked about like all of the decisions that he had to go through. He talked to the father of the son who didn't make it after the gator attack, and talked about how you know, he personally called him and wanted to make sure he was there for anything. But then he had to totally compartmentalize that and go open this park. And all the Shanghai officials were saying, you can't bring this up or talk about it or acknowledge it because like this is like it needs to be a happy day or whatever. Mm-hmm. So he went out and did this whole opening, and I actually went back and looked at a video of this, and like you couldn't tell anything happened. So like that's amazing that he could do this, but how important it was, you know, his decision making process in this, and all the stuff that they kind of go through. So that kind of sucked me into the book, and then it kind of, after he's done with that, it goes back to the regular narrator, and at the beginning it talks about like how he started at ABC and worked his way up through the company up until becoming CEO and today. And they talk about a lot of cool things that like I didn't know of before. How basically the deals with 20th Century Fox went down, how the deals with Lucasfilm went down, how the deals with Marvel went down and Pixar. Very interesting.
So if you haven't heard of this book yet, don't feel bad. It was just released this past September, so September of 2019. So it is a newer book. Again, it's called The Ride of a Lifetime. So I have actually not read this book yet. However, Tag is very, very, like, really, really enjoyed this book. So I'm going to add it to the long list of Disney books that I am wanting to read. So I'm excited about it. So we're just going to, Tag can kind of go more in depth about kind of the stuff that the book covered, but we're just kind of going to give a, I don't know, I guess kind of a history and just kind of a brief who is Bob Iger. We all know that he is the CEO and chairman of the Walt Disney Company, but you know, who was he before that? So Bob Iger was actually born in February 10th, so his birthday's coming up pretty soon, in 1951. He was born in New York City. Basically, he went to Ithaca College, got a bachelor's of science degree in television and radio, and his dream was to be a news anchorman. So I feel like he kind of went on a very different path. He was kind of still had one foot in the door because he was working, you know, for ABC mm-hmm. and still, you know, doing, you know, working with television. He just wasn't in front, you know, the one that was being seen on the camera.
Right. His dream of becoming a news anchor is kind of interesting because he worked as a weatherman in Ithaca for 5 months before he decided it kind of wasn't for him because, you know, he wanted to be one of those people that, you know, was on like one of these national morning shows, you know, like Good Morning, you know, if we're going to stick with ABC, you know, Good Morning America, you know, like a Robin Roberts kind of situation. And it just kind of wasn't working out for him. So in 1974, he joined the American Broadcasting Company, also known as ABC, and his first job was actually performing menial labor for television sets, on television sets. So not like TVs, but like on sets that they film television shows. There's some stories in the book that were really interesting about some of the people he worked with and how different of a workplace it kind of is now than it was back then. It was different back then. And so it's I think sometimes we forget that even though this was 1974, it seems like it wasn't that long ago, but like so much has changed in that time.
Sure.
After working with ABC for a long time, he worked with some really influential people during this time that really kind of shaped how he was going to be a leader and how he was going to handle people and projects. And one of the people he worked with really stuck with him, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head. I'm not seeing it in our notes here. I should have made some notes when I was going through it. But really, he kind of looked up to him because he would take something, they would do like a dress rehearsal for something. And the day before whatever it was would air, he'd be like, "This is all terrible. We have to start over."
Oh my God.
And they would start over, and the guy was always right. It ended up being a better product, but he knew it wasn't right. So having the courage, I guess, to tear everything down at last minute and trust your team that they're going to get it where it needs to be. One of the things that he worked with, one of the last things that this guy he worked with did was an Olympics broadcast. The last year ABC had the Olympics, mm-hmm. and they had all types of weather problems and everything else. So he really worked on this, trying to get this all perfect. And it actually ended up being working out really great for them.
Continuing his career at ABC, in 1989, he was named head of ABC Entertainment. He then served as president of the ABC Network Television Group from 1993 to 1994, and was later appointed as Capital Cities / ABC Senior Vice President in March of 1993, and then Executive Vice President that July of 93.
Yeah, it was very quick.
So the thing that's really amazing to me, I don't think we really covered this, but he actually graduated from college in 1973, and so his first like real job after college was at ABC. So he really worked, you know, really truly went from the ground up mm-hmm. of that company, which is just, that's insane. That's incredible. Well,
and he talked about some real challenging moments from this, because obviously when he started with ABC, it was just ABC. Mm-hmm. And then Capital Cities bought ABC, and he talks in the book about how hard it was for everybody he worked with, because they all had, you know, certain ways that they did things. And so when Capital Cities purchased ABC, there was quite a change in how everything kind of worked there, and that was kind of difficult. So the reason that this is important is later on in life, when Disney takes over ABC mm-hmm. and Disney takes over Pixar and Marvel, he remembered how it felt to be taken over by somebody, and made sure that he kind of didn't make those same mistakes to try to keep the people there and keep them happy. One of the things he talks about that is true, and I don't think a lot of business people think about sometimes, is when you buy a company, you're not buying a company, you're buying people.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to make those people that you're buying the company for leave, because mm-hmm. then what was the point of buying it? Because otherwise you could just hire other people. But Capital Cities took over ABC, and then he actually worked his way up very quickly to up in Capital Cities ABC, becoming, as Teresa said, President Chief Operating Officer. So, I mean, it's kind of funny, because until he became CEO, I really didn't know much about Bob Iger, but he's been a really influential person in the media aspect of things for a long time.
Well, of course, it was 1996 that the Walt Disney Company purchased Capital Cities ABC and renamed it to just simply ABC Inc. And Iger remained president until 1999. And then in February of 99, Disney named Iger the president of Walt Disney International, and which was the business side unit that oversees Disney International operations, as well as chairman of the ABC Group, which, man, all of these titles, like, to me, that sounds like he very much had, like, one foot in each, you know, in each side of things. I just can't imagine what his job all entailed, you know, being in charge of Walt Disney International, plus you're still the chairman of the ABC Group. So I feel like that's two very different worlds mm-hmm. that he's now in and having to, you know, be in charge of.
Well, and this is where it gets kind of interesting, because Iger was kind of talked to by people at Disney and said, like, here's the deal. Like, we're kind of looking for, there was another executive named Michael Ovitz, who kind of was not a good executive at the Walt Disney Company, but Michael Eisner was kind of grooming to be like the number two in charge, and eventually succeed him as the CEO. And then stuff happened and he kind of left, Michael Ovitz did. And so Iger had this weird kind of situation where he was trying to, he wanted to be in the number two spot after Michael Eisner, but Michael Eisner was kind of feeling, I don't know if like threatened or, I'm not sure exactly how to describe
maybe
it.
Maybe he felt like he's getting pushed out.
Maybe, but we weren't quite at that particular point yet. I mean, Michael Eisner did have quite a bit of a rough go of it after Frank Wells passed away. And so it was really, really kind of difficult. But eventually Iger kind of just told Michael Eisner, like, hey, I'm going to leave because I don't have anywhere to go. Like, if you're not going to put me in this position that I've worked really hard, because people had told him up to this point that, like, you know, you're probably really good for like the number two or, you know, like the person who's going to eventually take this over. But finally, Michael Eisner, kind of put it in place as the chief operating officer. So he finally got to number two. But again, it was kind of an interesting time in the company. There was a lot of, and in the book, he goes into a lot of detail with this of all of the weird happenings between Michael Ovitz and Michael Eisner and himself, and just a lot of like being promised things and then kind of going back on it and that kind of stuff. So very complicated. Interesting. That's why I like the book. It's very interesting, but.
Well, as we all know, he did eventually become the main head honcho for the Walt Disney Company. So he did replace Eisner. So on March 13th, 2005, Disney announced that Iger would be the one to succeed Michael Eisner as CEO. And it looks like Eisner held that title of CEO until he resigned in September of 2005. So it seemed like it was kind of a quick turnaround, but as you can see, you know, and we always feel like, where do they pick these new people to be the CEO? Well, it's really interesting to kind of look at Iger's past here, because really, I mean, even though his company, he changed his hat very many times, he kind of has worked for the same company his entire career. Right. You know, it got bought out a few times is all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's amazing. I keep thinking back to the fact that he was a laborer on television sets to now the CEO of the Walt Disney Company. That's just mind-boggling.
Dreams come true.
Just mind-boggling. So, but Roy E. Disney was a major promoter and major advocate for Iger to be the next CEO.
Yeah. Well, and part of that too was that Iger, throughout the book, Iger kind of talks about how he was very good at figuring out what people wanted and trying to like give that. So
sure.
Michael Eisner and Roy Disney did not get along. There was a lot of like drama going on, and obviously he was trying to get Eisner out of the company. And Iger kind of found out that really what was going on with Roy was Roy felt disrespected by the Walt Disney Company. He felt like ever since the beginning, like he had never felt as respected as he should be by the company, and that, like, you know, I have the Disney name, but like nobody seemed to care. And mm-hmm. So he tried to be involved in a lot of things and tried to do a lot of things, and they kind of just ignored him, like, oh, we don't care, you know, you're not Walt or whatever. And so when Iger became the CEO and they needed to deal with Roy Disney because they didn't want Roy Disney continuing to have this Save Disney thing going on, and he's like, what do you want? And he's like, well, I just want, basically he found out that he just wanted to be respected. So they gave him an office at the studio mm-hmm. and they said that like, you can, you know, come in and do this stuff and we'll run some things by you. And like, that's all he wanted. He just wanted to be respected. And so Iger decided, okay, that's what it is. So here's the deal. We'll drop a contract. We'll give you a paycheck. We'll give you an office, you know, we'll give, you know, whatever. And, but you've got to stop this. You can't be tearing the company apart. We all need to be together now. And Eisner is going to be leaving. And that same thing happened with Michael Eisner had developed this division inside the Disney company that everything went through that's called strategic planning. And Iger hated it because people that were in charge of their own divisions, people that were in charge of retail, people were in charge of the parks, people that were in charge of every aspect of the company couldn't make decisions for their own divisions. They had to go through strategic planning. So one of the first things Iger did was he just got rid of strategic planning because that allowed them to be more nimble and be more innovative and try things, where strategic planning was a lot more like they wanted things to be safe, and they kind of, I don't know, it was just kind of didn't work out as well as it sounds like in the book. So So they figured all that out. And then, of course, the other thing that Iger started to try to do right after this was Eisner had started kind of a fight with Steve Jobs. And, of course, they were going to lose Pixar partnership. Mm-hmm. And so Iger went and talked with Steve and was like, you know, what can we do to, you know, can I come, you know, tour Pixar and stuff like that? And he went through and Iger had a great time. And they kind of started this great relationship. And I did not know that Bob Iger and Steve Jobs had a really great relationship together. In fact, later on in the book, after Steve Jobs had become sick with cancer and it had come back, mm-hmm. Which ultimately took his life not too much long after that, Bob Iger was one of the first people other than his wife that he like confided that the cancer was back.
Wow.
You know, and so he talks in the book about how they had like a great mutual respect for each other and how they were really great at working together. When the first video iPod came out, Disney was involved with that because of Bob Iger, and that was the because he wanted to take the chance on it. So there's all these different things. He also said that if Steve Jobs would have lived longer, that the companies probably would have merged. Apple and Disney probably would have merged at some point by now. But wow. Obviously things are a little different. It would have been interesting to see how that would have gone together. But I do find that interesting.
So I think what kind of speaks volumes and really makes a lot of Iger's moves make more sense is talking about what his strategic vision was for the Walt Disney Company. And it really just focused on three fundamental pillars, which was generating the best creative content possible, fostering innovation and utilizing the latest technology, and expanding into new markets around the world, which when you look at those three things individually, you can almost say, oh, generating the best creative content, that sounds very much like focusing back on the storytelling and the animation. Sure. And then fostering innovation and utilizing the latest technology. Darn, that sounds a lot like Imagineering, right? And park stuff. And then, of course, expanding into new markets around the world, which would be kind of his crown jewel. Well, one of his many crown jewels, really, right? With the park in Shanghai. So I think that speaks volumes. And, you know, my perception with Roy Disney is I think Roy felt that, you know, maybe he wasn't being included, but I think he was also very passionate about the animation division. And I think, you know, there was a time, unfortunately, that the people in animation were kind of being ignored and they weren't getting, you know, as much funding, as much support, you know, however you want to say mm-hmm. it, as, you know, everyone maybe thought. And really, it all started with animation. The whole company was kind of built around animation and cartoons. So it's really important, I think, for the company not to lose sight of that. So I Absolutely. Think for me, I think that may have been what one of the things with Roy, or maybe mm-hmm. one of the major things with Roy Disney.
Yeah. So, of course, the thing that everybody remembers Bob Iger for is going to be, of course, the purchasing of all of these yes, giant
buying
things.
Everything.
So, as I said earlier, he talked to Steve Jobs. And one of the things in the book that I thought was fascinating was the way he kind of approached Steve Jobs to buy Pixar is he kind of just like was chatting with him one day. And he was like, what do you think? Like, Pixar was starting to eclipse Walt Disney Animation. Like, Pixar was like, nobody cared about Disney anymore. Like, Pixar was making all the great movies. So Bob Iger was kind of in a bad spot because how do you convince this other company, especially with somebody like Steve Jobs, how do you convince this other company to sell to you when they're doing better than you?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
what about mm-hmm, this? So mm-hmm. what he kind of negotiated, and I think that one of the things I learned about Bob Iger in this book that was great was because he was so good at figuring out what people's motivations were and what they wanted, he could negotiate really well.
Sure, yeah.
So like with Steve, he met with all the people at Pixar and basically told Steve, like, here's the deal. If we purchase you, you can come in under the Disney brand. Like, we can continue to work together and everything will be great. We'll take care of your people. He had this, it was interesting. They had this whole scene where he went into a boardroom at Apple and Steve Jobs had this giant whiteboard and he's like, okay, let's start writing some pros and cons of like joining Disney. And so like, there was tons of cons. And Bob Iger says in the book that he's like, there's no way Steve is going to sell. But at the end, he kind of looked at, you know, Steve Jobs asked him, what does he think? And he said, it looks like there's a lot of cons. And he said, but that is, you know, basically the vibe of it was, that doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. And so he said, as long as you take care of people and like leave Pixar alone, like you can buy us, but don't change us. That's fine. And if you like promise not to do that, it'll work out. So they did. And they purchased in an all-star transaction, they purchased Pixar for $7.4 billion and also got back their first star, Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, which was before Mickey was Oswald.
Yes,
and yep. We see Oswald in California Adventure. Mm-hmm. And then just a few years later, he bought Marvel Entertainment for $4 billion. And he used kind of the same thing. He got a hold of the main person over at Marvel, which was very difficult. It was hard to get a hold of this guy who basically was like never seen about really, and like very difficult. And they met at this country club, and basically Iger just talked to him and negotiated like, what's important to you? And they kind of went through the same thing like they did with Pixar, and they got Marvel Entertainment on board, which is crazy.
And of course, the next big purchase happened in 2012 when Iger signed a deal with George Lucas, and I think we may have heard that guy's name before.
Yeah.
Of course, they purchased Lucasfilm for $4 billion. So not only did they acquire the rights to Star Wars, but they also got the rights for Indiana Jones.
Yeah, which is great because obviously they had already partnered with George Lucas before with Star Tours and the Indiana Jones Adventure. And they had actually partnered, I believe ABC was the one that did the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, I think is the name of it was, back in the 90s. So like there was already this kind of, you know, relationship together.
Yes, yep.
And again, Iger explains in the book how he had to talk to George and like, it's really hard to take something that somebody has created, an entire universe,
right,
that someone has created out of their own mind,
and
to give that up and like sell it to somebody else.
To kind of let go of it. Yeah. So the thing I find really funny, and I feel like a lot of our Disneyland fan listeners can probably relate to this, but when this deal came to light and it was announced that Disney was going to be purchasing Lucasfilms, I really was not surprised. And the reason I wasn't surprised was because Lucasfilms, Star Wars, and Indiana Jones were already being represented in Disney parks, but they were not Disney franchises. And that was just always, to me as an adult, seemed off, because I know, you know, you kind of understand how these things work. And obviously there had to be relationships made and, you know, whatever. So when, you know, when that happened, I was not as shocked as this, I would say, the Star Wars universe people were. And I know there are a lot of people were really worried about, oh no, like Mickey Mouse is now going to be in the same field as Luke Skywalker, and you know, how terrible.
Right.
And I said, because I had some friends that were actually really worried about it, and I said, you know, I think this is probably one of the better things that could have happened to these franchises, because Disney is all about its history and preserving its history and staying true to itself. So I don't think you have anything to worry about.
Right. Yeah. And I think that with, through all these acquisitions, I feel that, you know, you go back to Pixar, obviously Pixar has continued to make great films. A lot of times, you know, actually one of the parts of the deal was that the Pixar lamp and stuff would always go before the Disney castle, which is still a thing today. And keeping these things, you know, their own thing. Obviously, Marvel Entertainment has continued to be a powerhouse, and I don't think that we've lost since 2009. I mean, they had made some movies prior to that. You know, since 2009, I don't think the movies have gotten worse. If anything, I think they've gotten better.
Yeah.
Obviously, Star Wars. I mean, how many years had it been since we had something Star Wars come out?
Right.
And so Disney's like putting it back to use, which some people get upset with. And for a while there, it did seem like they were going to be pumping Star Wars for all it was worth, because they did the Solo movie. There was rumors of a Obi-Wan Kenobi movie. Then, of course, there was the sequel trilogy that just ended. They're talking about another trilogy somewhere else in the Star Wars universe coming out. Of course, with Disney Plus, they did The Mandalorian, which was hugely successful.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, these are all good choices. And I think Bob Iger, like, you know, he kind of made some good choices here. Of course, leading up to just a couple years ago, they worked to get a deal together for 21st Century Fox, which includes like things like The Simpsons,
which I still like. It hurts my head to think that, but
that The Simpsons are part of Disney now.
The Simpsons are Disney. Yeah.
But there was a lot of stuff under Fox that like it's kind of cool to have come over. The X-Men and stuff were under Fox, which was technically part of Marvel. So to kind of combine Marvel back together, at least rights wise,
yeah,
just kind of makes some sense. And so I just, all of this stuff, I think, just comes together really nicely. And then, of course, you know, every time Iger has wanted to retire, he keeps getting it kind of pushed back and pushed back. We kind of skipped over because we were talking about all the purchases, but in there, we talked about it in the beginning a little bit too, that, you know, in 2016, he opened the Shanghai Disney Resort. So that was like a huge deal for him. And so it's kind of sad that we talk about this now because of the virus that's going on in China, that
yeah.
both parks over there are closed. The mm-hmm. Shanghai and Hong Kong mm-hmm. resorts are closed. So hopefully we can get this epidemic kind of under control. Back in April of 2019, Iger finally announced that he will depart for sure when his contract expires in 2021. We will figure all this out, and I'm curious to see who is going to take over his legacy. I know there's been a lot of yeah. times on this podcast, too, that we've talked about, especially things with the parks, that, you know, people have done great things, and then they kind of just get to a point where we need some new blood. Bob Iger's done a lot of great things for the company, and through this book, I have a lot more respect for him, and I understand his position a lot more and why some of the decisions were made with the Disney company that maybe I didn't understand before. So if you're interested in all that stuff, I highly recommend the book. I am interested, though, to see who comes next, because there's not really a clear number two person
sure.
that's going to take over for Bob Iger. Maybe Bob Chapek, who runs Parks and Resorts right now, but I'm not, you know, who knows? I don't know if that's the best fit, but we'll see.
Well, but then again, I think we were all, you know, I think we all feel a very deep connection to, you know, not only the movies, but of course the parks. And so it's always very nerve wracking for us when something changes, because you don't necessarily know if it's, you know, a change for the better, for the worst, or, you know, what's going to happen. I feel like a lot of people felt that way with Iger in the beginning, because I feel like we don't really know who these people are until suddenly they're now announced who the CEO of the company.
Right.
So, you know, so it was really interesting. I'm really glad that this memoir did come out to kind of give you a peek behind what it means to be the CEO of the Walt Disney Company. Mm-hmm. And then also just to kind of get what his backstory was.
I am just laughing because I'm looking at this Wikipedia article and I'm just reading this line. Iger avoids all carbs except pizza, which he seeks out everywhere in the world.
Oh, personal life.
Yeah, I was like, he seeks out everywhere in the world. I just, for some reason, I had this vision of Bob Iger, like, on a company jet flying around the world trying to find all of the different pizzas
all
everywhere.
Pizza. So, you know, we almost forgot, which you guys all know this, but another big thing that Iger did give us, of course, was Disney Plus. That was another.
Yes.
One of his many, again, crowning jewel achievements that he gave the Disney company.
Which is interesting, too, because he in the book, he talks about leading up to that, like just sure. a few years ago, they talked because they bought a company that dealt with streaming, and they did ESPN's streaming platform.
Okay.
And they worked really hard to get Disney Plus going. And, you know, I'll be honest, I was really impressed with Disney Plus. I mean, the first like day or two, there were some glitches with it. But overall, like, I haven't really had any problems recently with it. Have you?
Every once in a while, I get the loading thing and I have to back out and then go back in, and then it's fine. But that's very rare. So I don't know if it's it might be my internet connection. It might not have anything to do with the actual, sure. you know, program.
Well, if you want a great place to talk about all things Disneyland and Disney in general, then supporting the show and joining the Discord chat is the right choice for you. Supporting the show at the Park Hopper level or above gives you access to the great community, arrange meetups in the park with other fans, share pictures and history from the parks, and more. There's always something cool and interesting happening in there, so why not support the show and join the other weekly tiers? Head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
Well, if you want to have a voice in the podcast and our discussion topics, please head over to dlweekly.net/vote to register your choice for the next discussion topic. We have been getting a lot of great responses, so please keep up the great suggestions for the future of the show.
Well, now it's time to return to Trivia Land and James over there to get the answers to this week's trivia.
I'm scared.
Right off the bat, thank you, Gretchen D, Tess K, Tara F, and Scylla H for the questions. I think you've stumped all
yeah, everything. I think so too. Great questions, guys.
Mm-hmm.
I will say they were definitely stumpers for you. You got on the right track on a lot of them. You just didn't quite get there. So the first one.
What did you think of these questions?
I thought there's no way I'm getting any of these. So they're all great for me. So question one from Gretchen D was, where in the resort can you find a coin-operated player piano? Tag, you should have trusted your second thought of going to Frontierland because it's the Pioneer Mercantile.
Oh.
Dang it.
But you would have had to know the place, so.
Yeah.
But on the right track, so dang, pretty good there.
I'm going to have to try and like find this. I don't think I've ever noticed that. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I like that shop, but like I only go into it like every other time I go to the park.
Yeah, yeah. I get a little tunnel visioned when I'm in shops, to be honest.
Well, so. They have really good, that shop has really good like clothing and stuff in mm-hmm, the side.
Mm-hmm. All right, question number two came from Tess K. There's a famous historic painting inside a Disneyland attraction. What painting is it and what attraction can it be found in? Half a point goes to Teresa. It is indeed the Mona Lisa.
I think you deserve to give me a half a point because I was the one who told her about Lisa.
Maybe, but you didn't go with it.
Sure.
So you have to look closely for this one. You can find it in a pile of paintings on Pleasure Island in Pinocchio.
Oh, dang. I was on the complete wrong track with that one. Wow.
Well, you got Mona Lisa, which was half a point.
Yeah, so good inspiration.
Thanks, Tess K, for that one.
All right, number three from Tara F. On Monsters, Inc., the sign at the ticket booth in the queue reads a list of rules for monster passengers, including seven behaviors that aren't allowed while on the bus, starting with no eating and drinking. What are the other five? I'll acknowledge you're pretty close on one of them with shedding. The full response would be skin shedding.
Ew. So molting was kind of right.
Technically true. The other four are spewing. Sloshing, gurgling, or rapid expanding.
Okay, that's a good one.
What?
That is fun.
So what was that, like one-fifth of a point?
Apparently, yeah, something like that. We're way too tame for what the monsters actually do.
Yeah. Apparently.
In our last run from Scylla H, there's a frosted window design in the Golden Horseshoe featuring cowgirl Slewfoot Sue. She's from the Pecos Bill section of the animated film Melody Time. What animal is she riding in the window design? It's a catfish.
A catfish.
Oh, geez.
That's kind of like a pig.
Yeah, almost.
It's also kind of like a bull.
Yeah.
If you squint hard enough.
It's crazy enough. There's no way you'd think about it, so... So thank you to you four for informing me as well as these two of some great trivia. We'd love to keep this rolling with interesting things that you know or see throughout the park. You can send me an email so we can have it on the show. It's trivia@dlweekly.net.
Just for the record, I got 1/5 of a point and Teresa got a half a point.
Woo! Big scores this week.
Right. We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.